Hello, everyone. This is Eugene Starks, NAHU president. Welcome to The Jump Off, where we take a big leap into everything leadership and NAHU.
Well, everybody, thank you again for joining us. Welcome back to the Jump Off the President's Podcast. I'm Emma Fox, and you should be used to hearing my voice now. And with me is the current NAHU president, Eugene Starks. And we are hosting today an exceptional guest, I think, that's a little bit new to NAHU circles, but maybe one of our most important new interests. And that is Dr. Jeff Gold. Eugene, do you want to kick us off?
Oh, absolutely. And Emma, of course, thank you as always for hosting this podcast for us. And Jeff, welcome to the Jump Off Podcast.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Jeff, you and I have gotten to know each other. Actually, really more recently, though, you and Emma and David have known each other a while. But when I spoke on the coffee break that Emma and David host, you were one of the physicians that were a part of that podcast. And then you and I connected after the coffee break and just had a great conversation and been trying to do some collaboration on some direct primary care opportunities, you know, since we met with coffee break. But I'm kind of jumping ahead with my understanding and knowing of who you are. But why don't you tell our audience who you are? I mean, we call you Jeff, but you're actually a doctor, like a medical doctor, you know?
Yeah, I'm a real one. I don't just play one on TV. Yeah, I grew up north of Boston. So I've always been kind of around, you know, a medical hub, but the version of primary care and family medicine that I was exposed to when I was younger and was a big part of what drove me into medicine in general, but particularly primary care, turned out to be very different than what the current system offers. And I think I started realizing that very early on in my residency training, that I think I was signing on to something that was very different than what the vision I had in my head was based on experience as a kid. And from day one, I would say it was probably disgruntled, just confused. I didn't really understand why we paid for healthcare, particularly primary care, with insurance. I was always brought up to think that insurance was something that you use for major accidents and major expensive things, not things that should be predictable and day-to-day and affordable. So the whole payment model was kind of always a little bit ass backwards to me. So I did my thing, yeah, you know, in the system as an employed doctor for 8 years. And then I got to the point where I said I can either stop complaining about how broken this system is and either shut up and just accept where I am, or the other option was to get out and start rebuilding a system that I thought made more sense. And when I had heard about direct primary care, that was my impetus, that someone had kind of already been doing and formulated something that I was unable to do in my own head. They were doing it, and I got out and haven't looked back in 6 years.
I love that. Emma, did you have a question?
Yeah.
Your wheels are turning.
They are. First of all, I'm a big fan of direct primary care. I am a patient of a direct primary care doctor, and the experience is night and day. I'm sure Dr. Gold will agree. I always find the easiest way to explain to someone if they've never heard of direct primary care before, and Jeff, tell me if this is crazy or not, but I always say, just imagine Netflix, but for your healthcare, right? Like, you pay something that's reasonable. You know what the cost is going to be every single month. And for that fee, that membership fee, you have access to your own primary care doctor. And a lot of people confuse that, I think, with concierge medicine, but it's not quite the same. Is that a fair, really high level assessment of what DPC is?
Yeah, I would actually kind of chuckle at it a little bit, because about 4 or 5 years ago, when I actually had more time to write a blog on my website, I actually wrote a piece about how DPC is the Netflix of healthcare. I talked about why the current system is Blockbuster, which doesn't exist anymore.
Oh my God, I love that.
our current system, unfortunately, does exist for a multitude of reasons, and people continue, including employers, continue to go shop at Blockbuster when they could be using Netflix. And what I add on to that is you throw in a combination of Netflix with a membership to Costco or BJ's, and you really have what direct primary care is. You're not only paying a monthly set fee to invest in a relationship with a primary care doctor, which is completely undervalued and has been devalued in the system to the downstream effect that it can have on outcomes, costs, blah, blah, blah. But you're also, by being a member, getting access to this shocking concept of what things actually cost. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you want to do a hemoglobin A1C blood test to see where your blood sugar has been over a 3-month period to see if you're diabetic, you can go to your local hospital lab and pay $100 for it, or you could be a part of a DPC practice and pay $5 for it. The biggest problem that we have in healthcare is the lack of price and cost and quality transparency to the consumer, because the consumer has been 5 steps removed from the actual transaction. And what we need to do is we need to actually use insurance for what it should be used for and allow market forces and transparency to take effect so that this model can be accessible. I mean, right now, I would say it's accessible and affordable to probably about 98% of the American population, because I would say if you have a cell phone, you can afford DPC. It's whether you want to or not. But it would also help bring costs down so we can actually get it to maybe the, you know, 2 to 10% of the population that I actually would argue needs it more than anybody. So, you know, I would say if you think Netflix and Costco, you've got a pretty good idea of how direct primary care works.
I like that analogy, and I'll go back, you know, as we're having this conversation, and one of the conversations that a number of members of Health Underwriters has had with me, particularly over the past year, is that as we gather at our conventions, you know, whether it's CapCon or annual convention or our regional meetings or state meetings, and we have all of these members who are consultants, advisors, reps for different, whether it's carriers or technology reps that are providing resources to all of us who are members of NAHU, we're all scratching our heads about what's the best way to deliver, or as I say, the best way to move members closer to quality healthcare at an affordable price. And that is what I see as the vision and the purpose of direct primary care.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think that unfortunately the primary care system as it exists in the fee-for-service insurance-based model, people think that that's what normal primary care is, and it's actually the total opposite. We're able to spend 30 to 60 minutes with our patient. We can take care of them asynchronously through telehealth, email, text, video, whatever, and actually provide consistent, affordable care in a relationship. And I think that unfortunately, and this is not to, you know, speak negatively towards anybody that's in the health insurance industry or underwriters or whatever. But, you know, when you look at insurance, your job should be to focus on how do we make sure people are protected against those big, you know, expensive chronic diseases, accidents, illnesses. But no one is sitting and focusing on what the value of a patient or an employee having a close, trusting relationship with a primary care physician who not only is caring for them in a preventative way, but also being there when they're sick, but is also providing the value of helping them navigate this screwed up system we have to make sure that they're getting the best quality, lowest cost care accessible to them.
I love what you're saying. Because you, like me, are not saying we don't need insurance. Quite to the contrary. We need insurance. But insurance doesn't need to pay for everything, just like your auto insurance doesn't pay for your auto maintenance. it pays for the catastrophic things that happen to your automobile. And I just want to go back because I like to say I was really part of creating the problem because I was over all of the customer service and provider relations for an HMO in New Orleans back in the mid-90s. And in that model, we insulated all of the members from the cost of healthcare. And we didn't have the technology. I think we had the right concept that we needed to have people in a relationship with a direct or with, you know, primary care physician, but we didn't have the technology, the connectivity we have now. So the model, I think, just collapsed upon itself because it couldn't support the connectivity we needed that we have today. But I just want to go back to your point about the way we structured this. You know, we just totally insulated people from costs, and that was great when cost wasn't astronomical. But, you know, now fast forward 20 years or more, everybody needs to be aware that, you know, health insurance is expensive because health care is expensive. But the thing that we are trying to do, so many of us who are part of the leadership of NAHU and so many other members of NAHU that really are just innovators in our industry, is they're trying to really, more than bend the curve, re-engineer the model. And I believe that direct primary care is a huge component of re-engineering that model.
Yeah, I'm going to comment on a couple things. The one thing I'll correct you on is, you know, health insurance is expensive because healthcare is expensive. A majority of healthcare, when delivered in the primary care setting, is not expensive at all. It's actually highly affordable. We've made it expensive by insurance.
Gotcha.
And unfortunately, what's happened is you have a general public, including employers, that are very smart people, but have been duped into believing that everything in healthcare is so expensive that if you don't use insurance to pay for it, you will go broke. The irony is the insurance and the cost of insurance and deductibles and out of pocket is what's making people go broke. You cannot use an insurance card as a credit card with a 500% finance rate for 20 to 30 years and not expect the chicken to come home to roost. So now what has happened to employers? They want to retain good talent. They want to retain their employees, but they have to cost shift or they have to, you know, narrow down a network to cheaper facilities. And it's just this never ending shuffling of deck chairs on the Titanic. And the part of the reason for that is because the analogy I use is we have been so focused on the mansion that we've built with all the great technology we have, the great medicine, research, pharmaceuticals, everything we have that makes our healthcare system actually really good, that is expensive. But we've designated 6% of our spend to the foundation. So we've basically built a really big skyscraper with no foundation to stand on. And the problem is the foundation isn't sexy. It's not what people look at. It's not what people go ooh and ah over. But without it, the building crumbles and everything just gets wasted. There's just waste galore. Yeah.
I love the analogy, and you don't know this about me, but I grew up as the son of a carpenter and our family had a construction company, and I would have to work on the foundation, and you wouldn't believe what my dad would make me do. I mean, we had to have the dirt before we poured the foundation. It had to fall at the right rate, and I would be down on my hands and knees with what we called the screed to get everything right. And I'm telling you, it was as if we were doing the final measurements on a fine piece of furniture, but we were doing it with the dirt so that when we poured that foundation, it was set right. So I love the analogy. Emma, I know you're jumping out your skin with some ideas and questions.
Now, first of all, Jeff, you know, the more I get to talk to you and know you, you deliver some stellar quotes. I've written some of them down already. So thank you for that. I did want to touch on a couple of things.
Are they repeatable in a public forum?
Some of them, most of them. and some people will get to know you and some
of
your quotes.
I'm speaking with a high class Southerner here, so I don't want to offend anybody.
You have to keep it classy for Eugene's sake. A lot of people are going to get to know you and your personality because by the time this comes out, many of us will have seen you on stage with another DPC doctor at our annual convention. And just for a little bit of context, you know, I think I've told you this, Jeff, but maybe not in a lot of detail. When I was hosting a coffee break probably about a year ago, the topic was universal healthcare. And we had a couple people from different countries who work in the insurance arm of our business come on as our guest speakers and talk about how viable of an idea it was to have universal healthcare in the US. And you said something on the coffee break that initially came to me as somewhat offensive, but I'll tell you this. What you said to me completely changed the way that I've been conducting my work for the last year. You said, it just seems absolutely absurd to me that you would be having a conversation about universal healthcare without asking a doctor what his opinion is. And that has stuck with me. I really do mean it. It has stuck with me and it has made me a better consultant and a better advisor all year. And it has led me to this belief that we truly cannot fix healthcare without the perspectives of those that deliver healthcare. While insurance is a component of that for sure, you know, we can't do it without guys like you. So I wanted to ask you what the significance is for you. I know you're at the HINT Summit right now in Denver, Colorado, which is a conference of lots of doctors, but also lots of benefit advisors. And it does feel like we're starting to merge. Can you talk a little bit about why that's significant as part of the progress towards fixing this?
Yeah. One, I'm glad that my comment went from being offensive to stimulating in some way. But I think that, you know, I always say, and you've probably written this one down too, is I don't hate insurance. I hate insurance being used for dumb using insurance to pay for something that's $5 doesn't benefit anybody, you know, unless you're a fully insured health plan where the economics are totally perverse and they like filing claims. But to answer your question, and I'll refer to my wheel, which obviously I know Emma has seen it. It's my vision of what a true health, I'm not even going to use the word plan, but healthcare ecosystem should look like. And I think what's happened is we've all worked in our silos for too long, whether you're an underwriter, a benefits advisor, everybody's operating in their own silos and no one's communicating with each other. And it's very emblematic of what happens day to day in the healthcare system. You know, patients are shuffled around to different specialists. No one's communicating with each other. The primary care doc doesn't even know where the hell their patient's being seen and by whom and vice versa. And I think what I'm trying to do with this wheel is eliminate those silos, allow everybody to stay in their lane. I don't want to be an underwriter. I don't want to write a health plan. I don't want to be a benefits advisor. I just want to be a doctor, but I want to be at the table, as I know other doctors like me do, having the discussions on how do we design these things to make sense for people. And, you know, you don't write law without lawyers. Why are we writing health plans and people that aren't even practicing clinical medicine are the ones doing them and writing them without any contribution from the physicians that are actually on the ground doing it? And unfortunately, if you're a fee-for-service doctor, you don't have the time to care about costs. You're just trying to get through your 20, 25 people a day in 8-minute increments. But for me, I got to the point of how am I working and providing a service, and I'm in the only service industry that I can think of with a provider and consumer of the service at the time of service have no clue what anything costs. You know, it's just so beyond dysfunctional. And it's not really a complicated solution. It's literally people that want to do the right thing and collaborate together to build something that we can be successful and make money, but do it by doing the right thing. And everybody wins. To me, it's just literally a no-brainer. I mean, I guess I'm way too simple, but to me, it is simple. Healthcare should be the simplest, easiest thing to deliver for people.
I love that, Emma. I literally am writing down some quotes as he speaks.
I'm telling you, it's inspiring.
Yeah, exactly. And really the importance of having you on this call and you and Dr. Alex Lickerman at annual convention, we have had, Em and I have had so much fun with this podcast, and we've talked to some amazing people this year. A lot of them are people who are involved with the association, have been for years, or even some newer people to the association. And those have been great conversations. But what we understand, and you're really echoing our understanding, is that our conversation has to be broader than just all of us who are part of Health Underwriters. We're all passionate, committed, and we know things are broken, and we admittedly don't know all the solutions. What I love about what Em and I have seen in talking to people over the years is we're all willing to try something different, because we know if we just keep doing the same thing, it's not going to change anything. So I just really want to make that point, you know, as people tune into this podcast, and we've had so many, you know, great conversations with close friends we've worked with over the years. You know, you're new to this association, and you're new to this discussion with us. You're not new to the discussion at all, but that is very clear in all the comments and all your quotable quotes already. It wasn't like you just woke up thinking about that. I want to go back to kind of the beginning a little bit, because you shared some things, and I'm going to share this in context. When you and I had a conversation a few weeks ago, told you one of my best friends is actually a real doctor, just like you. And he's my direct primary care physician. And he doesn't have a formal DPC practice like you have. But literally, a lot of my treatment with him is a text where I give him what my symptoms are, and he'll respond. He'll have me call the office, or he'll just have him call something in. Yeah, of course, he's got the history on me. He's been treating me for 10 years. But one of the things he described to me that why he opened his own practice, because he's a smart physician like you, and he was teaching at the University Medical Center. And they were opening all these primary care clinics, and they were giving him this business model where he was literally going to have to see about 25 to 30 patients a day to support this business model. And that's when he threw up his hands and went out and opened a private practice. It sounds like from what you were saying, that was kind of the crucible you were in. And the frustrating thing for Rob was he felt like he didn't have time to really understand the patient and address the care they needed. It sounds like that's what was your experience.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, look, do a poll of people, even in your industry, and ask them if they get more time getting their hair cut or with their primary care doctor. I mean, it's insane. How are you supposed to take care of a human being in both their social needs, physical needs, psychological needs in an 8-minute visit? It's ridiculous. And, you know, we drive people into the system where it's expensive. If we keep people where they should be and are in the affordable day-to-day world where we're allowed to function and do our job the right way, a lot of magic can happen. And that's where you can't really go back to the Marcus Welby days, but you know, I think the art and the humanity of the patient-physician relationship is what's been completely ignored and undervalued and not invested in. And I think if you look at any of your employer clients and you say to them, you know, I just want you for 5 years to double the current investment that you make in primary care and let us follow the downstream claims data, referrals, all that, I think people would be magically surprised about how allowing doctors to treat people as humans can go.
I mean, I'm literally writing another quote to art and humanity. That's what we all want. I mean, in this crazy technology world, we all want the opportunity to connect, and particularly connect with somebody as important as our physician, who is hopefully delivering for us a better quality of health, a better quality of life. But if it's really done sort of in a sterile technical environment, you know, I always say you can tell anybody anything you want so long as you say it right. But there's a lot of your practice, you could tell somebody in 8 minutes you got cancer, or you could spend hours with them, tell them about what it is, how you're going to take care of it, what the plan's going to be. It's a completely different experience.
Oh, 100%. I mean, and I think that there's so many what I call intangibles that are very hard for people to put a value, number, metric on, but you can extrapolate the value of you know, my patients, when they're admitted to the local hospital now, they get admitted to the hospitalist physician. But do you think there's a value there of me being able to speak with the hospitalist, check in on my patient, review the record, know what's going on, have those conversations, clarify things, versus that patient being stuck in the hospital with a doctor who they don't know, taking care of them, and having no contact with the primary care physician who knows them, knows the family, because they're stuck in an office seeing 25 patients a day in 8 to 10 minute increments and may not even know that their patient's in the hospital? You know, there's so much value that I think has just been overlooked. And it's a cultural issue. It's a societal issue where, you know, and I'm not saying this in a woe is me attitude, but primary care doctors have been completely just devalued to the point that, you know, people think all we do is, you know, UTIs and coughs and sore throats, and mid-levels can basically do a majority of our job. And it's not the case at all. It's actually the total opposite. I think what direct primary care has allowed me to do is actually have the time to practice at the extent of my training, which is way beyond what most people realize we can do. You know, I hear it every day. You can do joint injections. You can excise this mole off my back. Yeah, I can, you know, and I can save you $400 to $500 in doing so.
But not if you only have 8 minutes with them. I don't want you cutting them all off my back in 8 minutes.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the thing. It's like you said, the analogy I use is the airport gate analogy, which we've probably all experienced, that when you're sitting at the gate and your flight's delayed or you're not boarding, and you have no idea why, no one's making an announcement, no one's saying there's bad weather, there's a maintenance issue. That's when people get angry. And the reason they get angry is because they're not informed. We all know that mechanical things happen, weather patterns happen. But if you're informed and you're told, hey, you know, we want to get you there safely, the weather's, you know, not good right now, people get frustrated because they want to get where they're going, but they don't get angry. And we have so many people that are trying to navigate through this system as a layperson that are uninformed, and that's where they're frustrated. And not only that, they're paying a huge amount of money to be lost and frustrated and uninformed.
Yes.
It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, as we talk to clients about trying a new model for healthcare, and particularly using this direct primary care model, I know Emma will agree with this and maybe share some of her experience on this, but what we find is when this model has time to take hold, we see a higher level of member satisfaction with their health plan. We see a higher level of members getting to the right level of care at the right time, which are huge. Emma, would you add anything to that?
Oh my gosh. I was just having this conversation, I forget with who, but this week. A lot of people know who I am and what I do. And I work almost exclusively with reference-based pricing plans where there are no networks and no carriers involved. And that can be incredibly difficult for a health plan member. Thankfully, we've got great TPAs in Acuity, right? But, you know, it's hard. People have been conditioned to open up a provider directory and pick the name that's closest to their zip code. That's not consumerism, right? That's not what the intention ever was. And so reference-based pricing plans can be really difficult. They can save a lot of money, but they cause an incredible amount of stress for members. And over the last few years, we're getting to the point now where almost every new client that we bring in the door has embedded direct primary care with reference-based pricing. So the only thing that we've changed about this complex model is that we've added DPC. And Eugene totally is right. And I'm sure Dr. Gold has experienced this too. But as long as people have their hub and that person that's going to steer them in the right direction that they can trust and they've built this rapport and this relationship with, I mean, we see satisfaction off the charts in health plans that otherwise are pretty difficult to implement and maintain.
I want you to comment on that, Jeffrey, but I do want to add at this point, because look, we're a TPA, and yeah, I'd love for everybody in the world to be self-funded and let my company do it for everybody, right? What I know with all my years of experience and just the mindset of people is that there's always going to be a large population of individuals and groups that want to be fully insured. But what Em and I talk about is trying to build this model and then have this model tested and proven whether it's a self-funded plan or a fully insured plan. But Jeffrey, you referred to it that we got the way we structure our fully insured plans. I'm not saying get rid of the fully insured plans. I'm saying we've got to totally re-engineer how we do those fully insured plans so that there's incentive in their space for direct primary care.
Yeah, I think the problem on the fully insured side of things right now is, you know, and I live in the state with where Obamacare was founded, you know, with RomneyCare, is that we are including all of the things in these fully insured plans that shouldn't be insured and mandating that they're in the plan. So that's why DPC and fully insured plans, particularly HMOs, which are nearly impossible for DPC to work with due to referral issues, really make no sense. A level funded plan or a self-insured plan is really where this can have a huge impact. I mean, if the laws change with what the requirements are on the fully insured side, then I can see DPC really working effectively. I'll give a shout out to a company I'm an advisor for called Arrow Health. They just announced yesterday that they're going to be the first DPC centric fully insured plan that's going to be in Cumberland County, Maine, on the exchange in 2023, but they were limited with what they can and can't do because of the minimal essential requirements and blah, blah, blah. So I do think the self-insured and partially self-funded market is where this can really, really grow, because not only are you fulfilling what I call the quadruple aim, you're going to get happier employees, healthier employees, lower costs, and happier doctors. If your doctor is miserable and depressed and burned out, you're not going to get good care. And I argue, and I said this at Dave and Emma's conference in Phoenix to the room I spoke to, if you are a benefit consultant and you're designing a plan with a fiduciary PBM, an independent TPA, all the good things that you need, but you're still having the employees of those plans go to the fee-for-service chassis and the insurance-based model, particularly a big hospital system, your plan is bound to fail.
Jeff, you're absolutely right with your observations on some of the problems with fully insured plans that put up barriers to using direct primary care. What I know is that we can use our self-funded and level-funded chassis to prove out the direct primary care model. And then we can take that data and that information and work with our legislative council to craft proposed legislation that would amend the ACA, the mandates on fully insured plans, that would create the space, the opportunity to engage direct primary care on the fully insured chassis.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, it's a unicorn that I would absolutely love to see. You know, I think, unfortunately, again, we're very backwards with what we insure and what we don't insure. I mean, you know, I always use a very simple example of a mammogram. You know, an annual mammogram costs $250 cash is what we can get it for, including the radiologist reading it. So when you look at spending $250 a year, if you were a woman, would you rather spend the $250 cash and then be protected that, God forbid, the mammogram comes back abnormal and you need a biopsy, you need surgery, you're protected, versus us saying, oh, we're going to give you that free 250 mammogram, but then you've got a $3,000, $6,000 deductible as a hardworking American that we're going to expose you to, God forbid, that mammogram comes back abnormal. Shouldn't insurance work the total opposite? I would love to see some of these ridiculous requirements reversed and allow things to be more customizable, and it's certainly a mission that I can get behind and support, but that's a fight that I certainly, I'll leave to you guys. I don't have the time to deal with the politics then.
Well, we'll take up the politics, but honestly, not without the voice of providers to right. help substantiate some of the things we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, Jeff, I think we better let you get back to the other doctors and the other advisors that are trying to bridge this gap that has historically existed between us. But by the time everybody hears this, we'll have had you on the stage at annual convention, where I hope we'll talk a little bit more about your involvement in this group that's sort of emerging from both of our industries right now. I think at the moment, we're the health Care Rebuild Coalition, or we've got a few different names going around, but you're a big voice of that. You have some incredibly innovative ideas that make a lot of sense. And we'll probably talk a little bit at annual convention about how you were the first BPC doctor to open a practice in your area too. I think maybe in the entire state. So there's so much more to learn about you, but I know we're out of time. So I'll just say thank you for loaning us your opinion. I've really enjoyed chatting with you, and I think Eugene probably has too.
Oh, absolutely. We're excited that you're going to be at convention with us. I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, a couple things. First off, you know, one, thank you for including me in the discussion, and two, inviting me to come down. But the last thing that I want to say, and I'm going to try not to come across as difficult. One of the things that I really, really would urge is, I love talking, but 6 years into this, I'm at the point where I want to start doing, and I need people that are willing to sit in a room with me and hash this out and really start creating something that we can go, and Emma and David have already really started this, but really start doing, because I really think, based on my experience here, this movement is really going to be taken off. And I want it done the right way. I want to stick pure to what our mission is, but I want to start doing and talking a lot less.
I love that. We're in the same place you are. And, you know, it is hard to be the first adopter, but what we hope, and I think what we're seeing, is that there's momentum growing and a growing understanding of this model. And so I think we're going to see some fast followers. Hopefully in the next few years, we will be talking about the inroads we've made and the successes we've had.
I look forward to the ride, but thank you guys. Thank you guys very much again.